Hello there, and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Get Football Tactics podcast. I'm your host, Neil Shelat, and as always, I'm delighted to say I have been joined by Alex Barker. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing very good, sir. I've just got back from Rome. I'm happy to be back and recording a podcast with you.
Yes, quite the change in scenery, I imagine. And we're also joined by Varun Vasudevan. How are you, Varun?
Yeah, I mean, I woke up late today, so pre-podcast, you heard the kind of mistakes I was making. Probably not in my best element, but I'll still try to bring my A game for today.
You never know, we might hear him during the podcast.
Well, we'll see. Some way to go. Anyway, let's dive straight into it. As the title might have told you, we're talking about Real Sociedad today, who... not just an interesting team in La Liga because they consistently challenge for the Champions League spots or certainly the European spots, but also have a head coach who has been talked about a fair bit recently, Emmanuel Alguacil. We, of course, discussed him as one of the potential options for Barcelona in our episode where we looked at potential successors for Xavi. And he's been doing a fantastic job over the last few years, so he certainly deserves some coverage. And it's an interesting time to talk about them because obviously they were in the Champions League this season, made it all the way to the knockouts, which was a great success for them, a really great story, especially because of number of homegrown and academy talents they use. I think about almost half their squad had come through their academy. And in fact, Alguacil also, of course, someone who came through the academy, played for the team, then spent almost 7-8 years coaching in the academy and B teams before being promoted to the senior team. So it's a very sort of domestically sourced squad. And obviously then they ended up losing to PSG, but I mean, no shame in that when Mbappe was doing what he was doing. But in La Liga this season, they're not having, the best of times. Of course, they finished fourth last season to get in the Champions League. But as we record this, they're currently sixth. And they're 12 points away from Atletico Madrid, who are in fourth. So it looks unlikely that they'll get a Champions League spot again. And especially recently, their form has been pretty shaky. I was just looking at it. So from the 27th of January, they had a 5-match winless streak. And in all their games since then, which is 10, they've only won 2. So they're certainly not in the best of form right now, which is why I think we'll talk obviously about all the stuff they do well and have been doing well for the past few years, but also a few concerns and potential weaknesses that maybe teams are starting to exploit more in the last couple of months. So I guess that's a good enough context. Let's dive straight into it. Let's begin with how they operate in possession, because they are definitely a team who like to keep as much of the ball as possible. And if we just look at the sort of possession numbers in La Liga, anyone want to guess where they are this season?
I reckon they are fifth.
Varun?
I'm going to go higher, fourth.
Yep, fifth is the right answer. So good shot, Alex. And I think that about sums it up, because they're not like ultra possession focused like Las Palmas, who we recently discussed. But in most games, they will keep more of the ball. And I think their average is 56.4% this season. So that's a rough idea of how much of the ball they want. Now, I think when we talk about how they operate in possession, we have to note that they have two main attacking structures. There's the sort of the standard 4-3-3 with wide wingers. But more often, especially last season, actually, more often they used to use a diamond in midfield, so a 4-1-2-1-2 or whatever you call it, which had very different dynamics. And this season, they've been sort of alternating between the two of them more, changing things match to match. And I think that's one aspect really worth focusing on. So before we sort of discuss that, just one quick note is that their build-up structure largely will stay the same, because it's you've got your back four, and then you've got one number six and two number eights, regardless of whether it's a diamond or a 4-3-3 with wide wingers. And perhaps one of the most interesting parts of Real Sociedad's build-up is just how deep their fullbacks are, because even when the goalkeeper is playing out like from the box, it'll almost, in most games, I'd say, it's almost going to be like a flat back five nearly, because that's how deep the fullbacks will be. And of course, you'll have the defensive midfielder pretty close there as well. So you'll have those six players building up. And with that, they're pretty hard to press against them because of just the number of players they have back then. Obviously, the quality of players, which we'll touch on later. So I think that's one interesting aspect of their play, which is how they try and build against pressure. But I suppose the more interesting, and certainly the one with more pros and cons worth discussing, is their attacking structure. So let's get into that. I think Varun has something to say about a couple of their midfielders who influence what sort of shape they use, and then we'll get into a discussion about the issues they face.
Yeah, I mean, I think you summed it up well. I would still say the diamond is the principle around which they work in possession. But yeah, it has changed a bit from last year to this year. I mean, when David Silva was there, he would drop a lot into midfield. I mean, I would even say he probably at times dropped more than the two eights. He would directly receive from Zubimendi, who's the defensive midfielder at the base of diamond, lots of times. And he wouldn't often be in the front line, in the front three, which is what you would assume the number 10 or the player right behind the strikers should ideally be. But David Silva would be a bit more conservative, is not the word, but a bit more helpful in progression and a bit lesser helpful in the final third actions. So that almost looked like a much, much proper diamond. And in fact, sometimes the two eights would go into the half spaces and David Silva would drop. This year, though, even though it still is a diamond, it often looks like a 4-1-4-1, if you may, where Merino and Brás Méndez still do push up, but then there are at times two proper wingers. And there is a striker who doesn't drop as much as David Silva. So even if Oyarzabal plays there as a striker, and he does drop, obviously, again, he's naturally an attacking midfielder and he does drop. So often you do see the diamond variation and the wingers coming in as a striker. But then lots of times it also feels like a proper 4-3-3 or a 4-1-4-1, whichever you want to call it. And it's also reflective of the way their attack patterns have changed. I mean, last year, they had a lot of attacks centrally. You could see a lot of those through balls to the center and runs through the center, leading to chances and leading to goals. This year, they have a lot more attacks wide from the flanks. They actually have some proper 4-3-3 type wide attack kind of patterns. So, yeah, I mean, that is what I would say is the main change. But otherwise, the basic principles of the diamond are the same. As you said, they often build in a 4-1. Zubimendi is that anchor man or deep-lying playmaker. You can think of him as the Rodri of this system. And they often go to him, and he's able to quickly pick out a pass, either back to the centre-backs or a full-back or a midfielder, and open up a passing lane to one of the number 8s, or at times even as directly as the front 3. And they do these really good build-up patterns and quickly beat the first line of press. I mean, it's a very clear, the back four is a little deep. They attack the first line of press, and then in one or two passes, they quickly beat the first line of press. I remember when United played Sociedad as well, very quickly they would beat the front three press and then go to the fullback or go to the number 8 quite comfortably. So that is definitely one of their strengths. And the diamond especially helps when there are more numbers in the center and they can find those passes much quicker.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting that at times they can sort of alternate between these shapes in matches, because as you say, the diamond has been the sort of basis of their system and that's what it was built on. So what you can see sometimes is, because obviously just conceptually, when we talk about a diamond midfield, a 4-4-2 diamond, the one big concern that automatically swings to mind is how are you adding width to your attack, right? Because it's all very narrow, except the fullbacks. And in Real Sociedad's case, the fullbacks are also generally pretty deep. I mean, there are some occasions when they push up, but in general, we can say that, like you say, they form closer to a back four and certainly rarely push ahead of where the defensive midfielder is. So how do you add width is a real question for them. And out of the diamond system, what they often would do is that the ball side number 8 would pull wide in sort of in the wing to like in front of the fullback somewhat to offer an option there and to pull the opposition block across, and then the second striker would go out to the other wing. And I mean, if you generally look at their lineups, while in the 4-4-2 diamond, there's nominally a front two with two strikers. Like you said, there's most often there's only one proper number nine, and then he's generally supported by someone like Oyarzabal or even Takefusa Kubo at times would play in that position. So that's not a pure striker. That's someone who can drift wide, who's comfortable going on the wing. And so that was one of their variations to add width. But as you say now, this season as well, they're also just playing in a straight up 4-3-3 with two wide wingers to stretch the pitch on both sides. But I mean, I don't think they have really sort of solved the some of the issues they face, especially against low blocks when it comes to breaking teams down. I think Alex has a list of problems, as he always helpfully does. So Alex, go ahead.
Was that a negative energy jab? I think it was. It was very good. But I think at this point it's probably good to step out here, to be honest. And to the listeners, if you've watched Real Sociedad at any game and you've not recognised some of the things Neil and Varane have just spoken about, I would join you, which I think sums up the problem around Sociedad. For context, I most recently watched them on a 5-game spree against Villarreal, Betis, Athletic Club, Celta Vigo, Rayo Vallecano. I know Neil's games he's watched are a bit more sporadic. He watched 3 in a row recently, whereas Varane would watch games a little older.
In 2020.
Yes, I wasn't going to say it, but thanks, Neil. Varane also did refer to Real Sociedad v Manchester United, which wasn't this season. But anyway, I know Varane has watched them this season, but like September, October time. And I think the problem with Real Sociedad is that, or La Real, is that they've got so many approaches they're trying to do that I think depending on when you watch them, they can just look like a different team. So that in my own notes, I have them trying a 4-3-3, like a very, very, very clear 4-3-3 with Kubo far right wing, Oyarzabal up front, Baranichea at left wing, very high and wide wingers. And then the next game, go into a 4-1-2-1-2. With narrow forwards, Kubo might be there, or maybe it's Umar Sadiq with him, or maybe it's Umar Sadiq and Andre Silva, or maybe it's Oyarzabal and Sadiq. They try so many approaches, and it is clear that they're just trying to find their magic formulas to break down deep blocks. But I think the problems are it always comes down to their reliance on two individuals, one being Martin Zubimendi in build up, who we'll talk about more in later, but he is the key at Ariel getting the ball and build up, rolling his marker, spraying a pass forward, and then setting like up a fast attack. And they're so reliant on Kubo. Wherever he's playing, he's always picking up the ball on the right hand side, and it's always down to him to find the magic pass, find a magic shot, like whether that's in transition or against the block. So I feel a little sorry for him and Argo Sil. It's just that he is trying to come up with many different approaches, and I don't necessarily think these approaches are bad. It's just I think you could argue to an extent he's a little limited by the individual quality he has at times, in terms of when he doesn't have a Kubo on the pitch, it immediately becomes a lot harder to break down opposition blocks. Neil has his hand up.
Yes, I mean, I totally agree with you there, because if Real Sociedad had better players, they'd probably break down lower blocks much, much easier. And as you said, I mean, Kubo is the only one really with an attacking spark who sort of makes things happen out of nothing to break down those blocks. But I would also then say that, I mean, I don't entirely feel sorry for Emmanuel Alguacil, because I think this is a conscious decision he's making. And the main sort of reason behind this is he is very much a manager who is very focused on controlling games, right? Both in and out of possession. We'll get on the out of possession stuff later. But in possession, like we said, so they have those deep fullbacks, obviously in part to help build up, to lure opponents out, like Varun said, but also they're a really important part of their rest defense structure. And they just, I mean, they're very concerned about not conceding dangerous counterattacks. And then they also counter-press really well. We'll touch on that as well in a bit. But even when you look at their, like, just generally, like, when you look at them play, you look at their past selections, it's, they don't take a lot of risks, is what I'm trying to say. And I think that comes from the head coach, obviously, in terms of how they want to play. So they want to play pretty securely. They don't want to sort of try and play, you know, a risky pass, maybe break down a block, but maybe also concede a turnover. They're just trying to sort of keep things as sort of secure and stable as possible. And I think what's happened this season is that more and more teams have, because I think we saw signs of this last season, and now especially this season, more and more teams have realized that, I mean, there's not much of a point pressing Real Sociedad because they will probably play through it. But if you just sit in a deep block, they're going to be really frustrated. And the other thing is, which is something I've mentioned, I think whenever we talk about La Liga, is that there are a lot of very comfortable low block teams in La Liga. Especially, I mean, almost every team in the bottom half of the table is perfectly comfortable sitting in a low block. So when Real Sociedad come up against these teams, their opponents are very willing to just sit and, you know, enjoy. I mean, obviously run around a bit. But then they don't really do much. And I wonder if Alguacil can sort of, you know, maybe take, sort of encourage his players to take a few more risks. So I think that's where, that's something for them to consider right now and towards the end of the season. But Alex has a counterpoint.
It's a way of introducing it. Yeah, I'd actually push it back against it. I wonder, because you've watched them recently, right?
I will mention that. So, I mean, obviously, I've watched them, like you say, I watched a few games recently, and then I've watched them sporadically throughout the season. But what I just mentioned is a thought I had, especially through their Copa del Rey semi-final tie against Mallorca, who are one of the lowest low-block teams in La Liga. And
is that the recent game, though?
Yeah, both legs, first and second leg. And in both legs, they basically sat in their own half, Mallorca. And, I mean, you look at Real Sociedad, first leg they did create a fair bit, but then they didn't score. But really, the second leg was the one where I felt that, I mean, I wasn't impressed with Real Sociedad, basically, because it was a time of urgency, right? Like, it's the cup semi-final. You have to, I mean, you can't be satisfied with penalties against Mallorca. You've been dominant throughout the two legs. You have to go and push for the win. But I didn't feel like they did enough.
Sorry to jump in, but like, because that doesn't necessarily go against the point it's about to make. I think if you're commenting on recent games, which I have watched less, I wonder if that's accurate because Real Sociedad struggled in, I think, definitely suffered a downturn in form in January to early February. And as we'll bring up this data now, maybe we'll skip over the whole day section later. But for context, when I looked at Real Sociedad, it was a New Year's resolution of mine. So on January 1st, I looked at their underlying numbers, and their non-penalty expected goals against was 1.11, which is the ninth best in the league. As of now, it's 0.98, it's the third best, but their attack has got worse. So I wonder if in response to their struggles, Emmanuel has gone for greater control and more security. Because what I found when I watched them, I was eager, I've got this noted down in my notes, of course, but like I've got this written down like at various points. They did try to create transitional attacks and they weren't afraid of making good runs in behind and those passes being made, particularly from Zubimendi. So that I wonder if that sort of clash there in what I've seen and you've seen is down to perhaps because it wasn't working or because they've suffered a bit downturn in form, Emmanuel's tried to play things safer. I think that would be an interesting answer. And just a quick point as well, because like, I think what this does touch on anyway in your point of like against blocks and deep blocks in La Liga, I think this is a thought I was talking with on the 20 Minute Tips podcast yesterday, is that I think there's a pendulum between teams that can't break down, or for teams that can't break down deep blocks, the ones where the manager is doing a lot and he's just limited by player quality, that is often like the cited reason. But I think what often doesn't get considered is, can that manager improve the players he's got at his disposal, slash is he not improving the players he has at his disposal to create those game-breaking players to break down those deep blocks? And I would argue Emmanuel Alguacil has done that with players like Kubo, which is why I kind of feel sorry for him. I think he improves the players he has. I think he's created a couple of game-breaking players in Zubimendi and Kubo, and he is now at his kind of ceiling where his team are dominant and are in control, but they've earned so much respect in La Liga that teams are just sitting deep against them. That's kind of where my headspace is at, but we should probably give Varane a chance to give his thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with both of you guys. I mean, even if you see this whole run, they have so many games where their possession is 69, 68, 67, 70. I'm talking about games like Mallorca, Osasuna, Mallorca again, Villarreal, Mallorca again, Sevilla, Granada. All of them, they're like 60 plus possession, low XGA. So they're doing their side of the part. But they've still drawn or lost most of those games. And they do keep conceding goals. And as Alex said, I do think they lack a few, you know, match winners. And it's going a bit into that territory, right? There are some managers who get stuck with this. I mean, it was a bit like Van Gaal in some of his later spells as well. A lot of control, a lot of good pressing, a lot of good quality and control in the build-up and even in the progression phases. But final third, at times, you just need a bit of that flair, a bit of that quality. You need a game-breaker. And other than Kubo, Real Sociedad don't have much of it. And I'm also not really impressed by their other options. I mean, Sadiq hasn't got going. Andre Silva isn't great. He's also not had a great time. Oyarzabal is good, but again, he's not like a proper striker. He's not the guy who's going to give you a lot of poaching or target man kind of actions. So I do think they probably are missing that one or two, you know, like really good presence up front. It's a bit like, you know, how Girona or, you know, other clubs, they have one target man, or they throw up a target man or a really good striker, and then suddenly the move finds, you know, an outlet. I think Sociedad lacked that. You know, some of these draws and losses could have been wins or at least draws if they could at least start going a little more direct and had some presence up front to do that.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I think also circling back to what Alex said about sort of them trying to be, or like being willing to be more transitional at times, I think that that's a fair point as well. And yeah, I think that was the case, especially earlier in the season. And maybe one thing that illustrates that is their sort of marquee signing in January, which was Geraldo Becker, who is very much a transition, like he's the epitome of a counter-attacking striker, as we discussed in our Union Berlin episode. But even at the time, I felt like this wasn't the best move for both him and Real Sociedad. And I mean, I don't think that's played. I mean, obviously, it's a very short time to this day. So, I mean, barely a couple of months. So, you can't sort of draw a conclusion, I mean, I think on the transfer.
The main problem of the Bundesliga offering that much space behind the lines or in transition versus La Liga, as we have discussed, the bottom half teams just not offering that space. That itself makes it a little tough. That itself makes it like, oh, you know, someone like Geraldo Becker has to do something very different or very unique compared to what he was doing just in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, exactly. And so I do wonder, like, if they maybe tried to go down the more transitional route, but then realized that that was not kind of working as well, and now they're sort of circling back. So maybe they're sort of stuck in a bit of a flux at the moment, and perhaps next, because I mean, even if you look at Real Sociedad under Alguacil historically, you do get these sort of like ups and downs, slight fluctuations. I mean, they've consistently been a top six team, but then, you know, between fourth and sixth, there often is a significant gap. As
they
there
tend
is.
To struggle in the second half of the season too. That's
also
the joke in amongst La Liga fans is like second half Imanol ruins the season.
Yeah, and that's also something interesting to consider, because I wonder why that happens. I mean, my the only theory which I can come up with is just the intensity, especially out of possession, that he demands, and the fact that Real Sociedad are far from the richest team in La Liga and don't generally have their deepest squads, especially when quality is concerned. That's my sort of best guess. But I wonder if you guys have any theories on that.
I mean, that's my theory too. Just another point before we close the in-possession stuff. I do think, I mean, maybe it's just my preference, and we discussed this in the last episode on how to break blocks, especially deep blocks. And I think that's a very relevant question here, considering Real Sociedad face a lot of them. And I do think they were much better at it with David Silva last year, or with the diamond formation last year. And it just goes back to that same logic, right? How do you break a block? Do you keep overloading players, more transition, more direct players, and go more vertical? Is that easier to defend? Or you actually get more patient, put more people in the middle of the park, put more people dropping, creating that space, then slipping a through ball in, and, you know, go more the patient way. I mean, Guardiola's interview recently, the Sky Sports one, he made an interesting point when he said if the opponents press a lot, then they go fast. But if the opponents sit deep, then it's the, I mean, he made fun of it. He said, then it's the whole routine. You pass, 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 and then it takes a long time. You open them up and then you create, and it takes a long time. So, I mean, he again is of the principle that if it's a deeper block, an organized block, more patience, more passing, more control, more movement is required. And I do think that could be the answer instead of more directness. Throwing on a Geraldo Becker against a low block, I don't know. I'm throwing on Andre Silva, I'm not sure. Maybe getting another midfielder, getting a diamond back in. I probably think that is the way they should go. It suits their team as well. And La Liga at this moment just have too many deep blocks. So they need to figure that out.
Yep, agreed. And I think they did sort of go in that direction in the summer. Like, after losing Silva, I imagine the closest thing to a replacement was Arsène Zakarian, who they signed. But he's been injured for quite a bit. So I imagine that's not helpful, obviously. Let's sort of go into the out of possession stuff now. And I think obviously one part which is between in possession and out of possession is rest defense and counter pressing. And like I mentioned, Real Sociedad are very much concerned and focused on that. And in this respect, they are very, very good. Especially so when they play the diamond, especially because what that leads to is a very narrow front five, right? The width, as I mentioned, will either come from a number 8 pulling wide or a second striker pulling wide. Not really the fullbacks, but like when the ball is in the middle, quite often all of the front five will also be in the middle. So, just given how close these number of players are, they were a really good, or they are a really good counter pressing team. When they play the diamond, especially, I think, and so I imagine they are sort of top of La Liga or close to the top of La Liga when it comes to counter pressing and pressing stats. And indeed, if you look at PPDA, they have quite clearly the lowest in La Liga. So that makes them the most intense team. Well, not necessarily, but in a sense, I guess we can say that. Then that sort of also, I think you can also see those themes in their general pressing. It's usually they'll press in a 4-1-3-2 shape. So obviously have a back four, Zubimendi in front of them, number 10 in front of him, number 8s almost like wide midfielders, so like quite split apart. And then there's the front two who are chasing the ball, blocking up the center, forcing it wide. And then when it goes to the fullback, the number 8 on that side will sort of close him down and force him basically into a corner with the touchline. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty intense press, especially from the front five. And then the defensive midfielder has a lot of ground to cover. But also, it's often very player-oriented in this structure. But generally, it does work pretty well, as the sort of numbers indicate. But I mean, certainly there are certain cases where it doesn't work too well. So shall we talk about those?
Yeah, I mean, I think you summarized it pretty well. And I do think it's very player-oriented. I would call it a man-to-man press often. And they do stumble across the usual issues of a man-to-man press, especially against good teams. So I think this works against smaller teams, and it works against probably 70% of the teams they face. But I'd just like to pick on some games, the game against Barcelona last year or the game against PSG recently in the Champions League this year. Such teams, one, they have the quality to play through a man-to-man press. Second, they have the tactical intelligence to pull out players and create that space. So in the PSG game, Dembele caused them a lot of problems because he was taking up wide and then central roles and then dropping deep. He was doing all sorts of things, and that caused their shape issues and gave space for other players like the likes of Mbappe. And even in the Barcelona game, I remember it was pretty easy for Pedri, Frenkie de Jong, all these players to just drop, go wide and dribble their way out. And, you know, attract the press and then quickly hit the space. So I do think it is a little easily manipulated by the good teams. So there is a bit of ceiling to that approach. And they probably have to mix it a bit or not just go full intense man-to-man. I mean, see, that works when you're the most dominant team in the league, right? We spoke about this with Ajax as well, and I think when Erik ten Hag was there especially, they could do that to the whole league and get away. I don't think Real Sociedad can do that to the whole league and get away with it. They can't do that to the top team. So I think that's also another reason out of possession where I feel their ceiling is capped to that fourth, fifth best kind of defense at best. You know, even in their best seasons, they'll always be there for this reason.
Yeah, something else I've picked up on, I didn't get to watch the latest PSG game because I was in Rome, and unsurprisingly on the one sports channel we had in our hotel, which I was very grateful for, they showed Lazio versus Bayern. But something I've picked up on with MNR, and this is a more legitimate criticism I have of him rather than he's in possession, where I think he actively needs to improve if he wants to, you know, be a title winning coach, is that I think sometimes Real are quite slow to adapt during games. So the key one I remember is earlier this season. This is, I think, well, maybe 5-6 weeks into the season against Atletico Madrid. What Atletico Madrid did is they built up in there like 5-3-2, but they pushed Samuel Lino, their left wing back, very far, and they dropped Griezmann both to the left side. And it just meant Hamari Traoré was constantly getting overloaded. And you could see this going on for about 20 minutes. And like, in Atletico were actively trying to exploit it. And Real Sociedad just didn't adapt at all until Griezmann and Lino combined to get in behind and score. It's just a thing I've noticed where I think the first plan generally is pretty solid. But sometimes I think Imanol is a little slow to recognise points in games he needs to change his out-of-possession system. And like, just in a game like that against Atletico Madrid, one of the best teams, that's where it will cost you.
Yeah, and I think, again, so this also circles back to what was mentioned by Varun about their game against PSG, where they didn't change quickly enough to adapt to like Dembele Central. And I do wonder, though, about in-game tweaks is an interesting topic to me, especially in-game defensive tweaks, because, like, so coaches are obviously standing on the touchline, and that is not a great view to look at tactical sort of patterns or, like, spaces. And so that's why most teams obviously have analysts in the stands who are relaying information to the coaching team. And I do wonder how much of sort of the slowness to adapt in game is down to the coach, and how much of it is down to like the coaching department and analysts communicating and all of that. So, I mean, obviously we can't possibly know the answer to that, but I think it's just something worth considering with regard to this criticism.
Yeah, I guess there's two things on that. I think like the first thing would be it probably does fall on the analysts department, and I think that it should end up falling back to the manager slash hierarchy. Like, you know, if the departments are well connected enough or the analysts aren't good enough, I feel like the analysts should be good enough to recognize what, like, when Larreal are losing control of games. Then, like, yeah, I think responsibility ultimately goes to people higher up. The second thing, as you were talking, was made me think someone needs to do a viz between stadium height and time taken to recognize that's to amazing. Change things during games. See if the view has anything to do with it, you know.
That's yeah, brilliant question. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously a difficult one to analyze from the outside, but yeah, just worth thinking about. But I think one thing, I mean, you can't really call this a tweak because this happens in every game. Okay, wait. Well, do you have something to add?
No, not to that discussion. But before you round out of possession, I had one thing.
Yeah, that's just yeah. So yeah, I mean, yeah, the one tweak which I was mentioning was, it's not really a tweak, but it's a common theme, which is a change in shape we see, is the creation of a back five deeper, like in a mid or a low block, and that's generally with the defensive midfielder dropping in. So I think, Warren, you were gonna talk about that.
That was about it. I mean, it actually speaks a lot about Zubimendi's ability. I mean, the way he can slot into the back five when they're facing these top teams, basically it just goes in line with the man-to-man approach, because when these teams are forming a front five, then the natural tendency becomes, can I form a back five to, you know, keep it man-to-man. And then sometimes when teams form a front six, they also try and pull Merino or Baranakshi or someone to the side and track a fullback as well, the last person who's joining to form the front six. So they do have these extreme, especially in the deeper defensive block phase, and especially against really top teams that like to push a front five or front six. And Zubimendi usually will drop as the left center back and try and cover the half space attacker, you know, who's the opposition team's attacking midfielder or number eight who goes high, or winger who drifts in. Zubimendi tries and tracks that person instead of a proper striker and leaves the strikers to the central center back or the right center back. So that is another variation they do. And I think that is smart. They're a little better in their deep block. I just think in the middle of the pitch is where the man-to-man gets a little found out, especially when they play through them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when they drop, their low block is pretty tough to break down. And I think that's, as you said, a lot of it is just down to like how many players they have back in the last line and tracking attackers. So yeah, they can't frustrate bigger teams when they drop into that. But obviously that's not, you know, a primary defensive approach to take, and certainly not what they do, because they are a pressing team, certainly. So, but I think that's one aspect which is definitely positive. All right, I think that's most of our analysis of Real Sociedad as a whole done. As always, we'll also now just zoom into a few of their key players who are ones to watch. And the first name on that list is Takefusa Kubo, who we've already talked about as the difference maker in this team. So Varun, why don't you tell us a bit more about him?
Yeah, I just have like one or two small points on Kubo. I mean, firstly, I think he's grossly misprofiled or misunderstood because of the way he looks. People think he's a very tiki-taka, Juan Mata types player, you know, who's a lot more creative, technical, but actually a little slow, and, you know, things like that, maybe because of his stature. But he's actually not that at all. He's, I would say, quite the opposite. So I just have his FBref report open. And can you guys guess who are the similar players to Takefusa Kubo in Europe's top five leagues in the last 365 days? Neil, go first.
I imagine this is, I mean, it's got to be attacking midfielders and wingers, yeah? Yeah, okay. I have no idea, man. Wide winger, knock the ball, dribble. Is Doku up there? Jeremy Doku?
No.
Alex, help me out here.
Repeat the question, please.
Similar players to Takefusa Kubo in Europe's top five leagues in the last 365 days, as per FBref.
Oh, okay, so it's going to be based on FBref stats.
I mean, it's like a really dribbly wide winger.
I'm not sure I'd be really dribbly, to be honest.
Pretty damn dribbly. What's his dribbling percentile, Varun?
Give me a sec.
I think that spoils it. I don't think you should tell us.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, don't tell us.
But I mean, Alex is on the right track. It's not Doku level Dribbly. Just
okay.
Tone that down a little. Grealish.
Nah, Grealish has a lot of like fouls drawn and stuff.
So Grealish is 10, like in the 1 to 10.
Yeah,
he's
take
there.
That, Neil.
Okay.
I'm really happy you waited for Neil to before saying, yeah, Grealish is there. Is Saka one?
Nah, too much dribbles. Yeah, for sure.
And by also, Takumisa Kubo is 77th percentile for take ons attempted.
Okay. Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah,
sounds right.
In that case, is Martinelli one?
Yes, Martinelli is number 6.
Wow, okay, fair enough, Alex.
Okay, I'll just tell
I
you guys
think
the
of
list.
Anyone. Yeah, please do.
Raheem Sterling, Nico Williams,
yes.
Rafael Leao, Kvicha, Martinelli, Garnacho, Mitoma, Adinga, and Grealish.
I'm
surprised by Kvaratskhelia, yeah, but Sterling is like perfect.
I mean, that just rounds up my point. That's the kind of player he is. He is pretty. But Dribbly not in the Jeremy Doku kind.
I have a better. Sorry to interrupt. But what I did is I went to the analyst who also have like recently introduced a player comparison thing. And they also have similar players. So, and they have none of the guys you mentioned, but I like these more. So they have 4 similar players to Kubo this season. Anyone want to guess? Number 2 is like spot on, in my opinion.
Is it Raheem Sterling?
Nah, I mean, obviously not. I said none of these guys, man. And I think Sterling is like sort of there, but like I should mention that like, so like if we think about stuff like close control, then Kubo is like a
Ousmane Dembele?
Sterling, nah, Dembele's not there. But Sterling can be a bit clumsy sometimes, but Kubo is absolutely not. Like with the ball at his feet, he's very, very good.
So these players are spot on.
I mean, not all of them, but number 2 is...
Rafinha?
Sorry?
Rafinha?
Nope. Okay, I'll give you guys hints. Oh, there's guys from... Okay, no, never mind. Okay, the top 2 are Premier League guys.
God.
They will face each other as we record this today.
Mohamed
That's
Salah?
A big hint.
Is one Salah?
Nope. Nah, I mean, come on, man.
What do you mean, come on, man? When it was the FB ref one, and then you said, and I guessed the FB ones because they're good to guess. And you went, no, they're not accurate. Let me get my own special calculation up.
Why didn't you just tell us?
Okay, I'll tell you guys. Leon Bailey, Dejan Kulusevski is spot on, I think.
What?
Kulusevski is, I think, yeah, that's much closer than Kvicha, Kvaratskhelia, Jack Grealish, and Raheem Sterling. Christian Pulisic, also a good one, I think. Andrea Colpani. He plays for Monza. I can tell you that much.
I don't like... I'm not particularly keen on any of those, to be honest.
Yeah, I like the FB ref one.
Yeah. All right, guys.
But anyway, I think we all align on the fact that this is a proper winger kind of player.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
And he's not like a lot of people...
Okay, you finish your point, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people used to think he's a very Mata, David Silva, Bernardo Silva kind of player. I think he's just a lot more direct, a lot more, as Alex was saying, right? The guy who makes the magic happen, the guy who cuts in and shoots, the guy who cuts in and crosses, the guy who beats his fullback and puts a good ball in. He's actually more like that, you know? He's a proper final third player. And yeah, I think that was my main point on Kubo. And I think he's getting much better and better at it. These last few years, he's like grown from strength to strength. The decisiveness of his actions, his final third, especially output, has kept on improving. You could always see, even 2-3 years ago, the dribbling ability, the technicality was there, but now he's adding that output to it. He's adding that XA, the XG, all those kind of things to it. So, I mean, it's been a lot of fun to watch him. He was on my United right winger list 2 years ago.
Obviously.
He was there. Nico Williams was there. Michael Olise was there. And we ignored all that to buy Anthony. So
well,
I'm going to stop there.
Round of applause for you guys. But no, I mean, I think what you mentioned there is spot on, like especially his development. The only thing I would say is I agree that he's certainly doing better as like a pure wide winger, attacking more directly. But I think he is someone who can also play inside to a decent level. He certainly does that for the national team, and can do that for Real Sociedad as well. He does occasionally. So that's why I think, especially like Leon Bailey is a good comparison, because he's also someone who can sort of attack wide in transition and inside against settled blocks. So I think he's just got that sort of element, additional element to his game. But yeah, completely agree with the rest of the stuff he said. And I think let's move on now to another player who's, I mean, he's been talked about a lot in the last year. So Alex will tell us about Martin Zubimendi.
Yeah, I think I'll say it right now. I think Martin Zubimendi is one of the best sixes in the world. I just don't think he gets the credit he deserves because he's a Real Sociedad. I haven't got so much to say. He's great at scanning. He always knows what's behind him. He's exceptional at receiving the ball. Like, his body position is great. Very good at rolling his marker. He's got a good burst acceleration. He's like, in the first phase, he'll like receive the ball, he's back to goal, but he's more than happy to push forward on like an eight, I guess, and receive the ball further forward. He's got good progressive passes, like splitting passes, but like a lot of people say he should be an eight, like, or further forward. I don't think he puts those passes up as frequently to be that advanced eight. I think Arsenal Twitter have kind of got in their head that he should be like that. And I think this is kind of my main point with him, that I think the views kind of shifted about him because his highlights are really good with him making these block splitting passes in behind, but he doesn't do that super frequently. What he's just really good at is taking up positions to help Real Sociedad break a press, make third man combinations. And when he's out of possession, he's also pretty good at tracking players wide. He's often the guy tasked to mark the 10. He'll quite happily drift wide to track a player, leave the centre vacated and get back into position. It's just a summary, really, of my notes on him that I've been collecting over the season. I'm really hyped about him. My only real point is that I don't think he's an 8 as he's kind of getting fan cast. I think he's a pure 6 and he's one of the best 6s in the world.
Yeah, I actually totally agree with what you're saying. I don't see him as an 8 as well. He just lacks that final third power, and there's also a little bit of the, you know, vertical power in terms of dribbling or in terms of the speed or the agility to just join the front five. I don't think he has that. I think he's much better as a number 6. I think he's underrated in his defensive abilities. I actually think he makes sense for Arsenal, but not for the reasons Arsenal fans say. I think he should be the number 6 for Arsenal, and Rice should be the left-sided 8.
Agreed.
In recent games, Rice has been much better as the left-sided 8 with Jorginho behind him. And that suits Rice a lot. A guy who does the build-up work, the receive back to goal, and then find others kind of work, and lets Rice push up a bit ahead and, you know, affect the middle third and final third. And then defensively, Rice can come out and help this person with his monster ball covering, which would make a lot of sense with Zubimendi. Zubimendi would complement Rice Odegaard to the T. So, I mean, I think they should sign him, but then I don't think he's going to move. He has a 50 million release clause, and every year people say Zubimendi will move, and Zubimendi keeps putting out interviews saying he loves being in Sociedad and he's not going to move. There's a very good chance he just retires there. I mean, with such a low release clause, if no one's snapping him up, no one's making it happen, I just think he's going to be there maybe for his life.
Yeah, and I'd be fine with that if that is true. I think it would just be like a Marco Verratti thing. Obviously, a lot more romantic as he's grown up a Real Sociedad, and if he plays there for his whole career, that's lovely. But a similar Verratti thing where it's like played at a team slash league where it's out of the spotlight and is really, 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 really good. We only really see it in the Champions League and he doesn't get the appreciation he deserves. All right, well, next up's Neil's section about Anas Romero. And Varane, I'm just going to leave it to you to interrupt him as much as he interrupted you on your Kubo thing to say, well, actually, no, I think you're comparing him to the wrong player. Should we get ready to compare Anas Romero to De Gea over Neil's
Yeah, that does make me think who Romero's similar players are, but I guess goalkeeping stats are not good. But anyway. Yes, Alex Romero. I have become the goalkeeper correspondent lately, but I really do like him. He's also another very well-rounded goalkeeper, very good shot stopper. If you just take his shot stopping qualities alone, he's pretty decent. But he's also a really good sweeper, comfortable coming out of his box. And for me, the best part or his best attribute is his ball playing ability. He is a key member of Real Sociedad's build-ups that we've mentioned. And like Warren said earlier, they do try and sort of bait opponents like to push forward collectively with the deep back four. But also a key element of that is just Ramiro keeping the ball. And he'll often do the sort of putting his soul on the ball thing that Brighton became famous for. So he'll just stand there, lure opponents in. But then he's really composed, really accurate with his passing, both short and long. And yeah, I think he's a very well-rounded keeper. Just, I think he's about 27, 28 years old. So I certainly think, especially with keepers being generally better for a longer period of time than outfielders, I certainly think he's also one for bigger teams to keep an eye on, because from what I can tell, he's a pretty well-rounded keeper. So yeah, that's my bit on Ramiro. No similar players. Sorry, guys.
Hold on.
Yeah. All right. I think that rounds us off for all our analysis. As always, last thing to do is predictions. I don't think it's worth predicting Real Sociedad's stable position this season, because they're probably going to finish like sixth. Does anyone have any other predictions? Otherwise, we'll predict. Let's predict where they'll finish next season and whether if Alguacil leaves, where he should go.
I'll go first. I think he'll finish fourth next season. And do you know what? If you asked me this question 6 months ago, I would have said Alguacil would have left somewhere. But I think he stayed there for so long and he's so passionate about the club that I think this could be like a Christian Streifing at Freiburg, where he's going to stay for like 10 years.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that's... yeah, I feel that way too, but...
If he was to leave, he should go to Barcelona.
Yeah. What was he our third choice?
My third choice?
Second.
He was second choice, was he?
He was all our good first choices had him. We had Michel, Mota and Alguacil. I mean, those are the three good first choices, I would say, for Barcelona. And I agree with Alex, by the way. They'll come fourth next year. I don't think Girona repeat this. So it's the big three and Sociedad again. Once Sociedad figure this out or get one or two players that actually suit them. And I don't think Alguacil will leave for a while. And it's nice. It's a nice story. So why not?
Yep. I agree with you guys. Although I will say that next season they finish fifth. Because either Girona do their thing again or Athletic Club, their good rivals, finish ahead of them. Because I think I'm more confident about Athletic Club sustaining their level.
My guess is both those clubs get picked off in the summer, but I don't see anyone picking off Kubo, Zubimendi or the key players of Real Sociedad in the summer. So I have a feeling these guys maintain, and if they add someone smart, like push off Andre Silva or something and get a good striker or a good attacking midfielder.
Push off Andre Silva.
That sounded like pushing him off a cliff.
Yeah.
But anyway, but I think the other two will get picked off. Girona have already lost.
Yeah, Girona are getting picked off already.
They have already lost their winger. Blind will decline a bit. They're going again. Gutierrez is linked to top clubs. So they're going to get picked off. And
yes,
Sigankov,
Dubvik, all of them.
Yeah, and so will Atletico de Bilbao as well. And they'll also lose Nico Williams and maybe one or two players. So I don't know. I just think Real Sociedad maintain.
Fair enough. Good shot. All right. That rounds us off for this episode. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And of course, a big thanks to you, Alex and Varun, for another lovely discussion. You can find all of us on Twitter. I'm at @ShailathNeil. Alex is at @EuroExpert_, and Varun runs the @TheDevilsDNA account. And if you go to the @GetFootballEU account, you will find in the bio the links to all our country and league specific accounts, which you can follow to be updated with all the latest news, analysis from all over the world of football, and especially in European football as we approach the end of a very interesting season. All of that's also linked in our description or show notes wherever you're listening. So take a look down there. And if your app allows it, please do rate the podcast if you enjoyed it. And of course, feel free to share with your friends and on social media as well. But thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll be back next week with another interesting episode. Bye-bye.